This is the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CatTalk Software, a podcast about the people, programs, and processes that come together to make businesses successful. At CatTalk, we're a software integration company, but we believe this idea of intelligent integration goes much deeper than software. On this episode, Jeff and Scott Brickler dive into CatTalk's core value of radical responsibility. Why does it matter, and how do you help cultivate that in your team? Let's find out.
Hello, I'm Jeff Brickler, and welcome to the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm your co-host, along with my brother and founder and CEO of CatTalk, Scott Brickler. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is sponsored by CatTalk. CatTalk is an integration platform for engineering softwares like CAD, PDM, and PLM with popular ERP systems. The last few episodes, this is episode four, I think. So episode four, the last few episodes, Scott and I were discussing different values that Scott developed over the years. And I think being a brother and growing up in the same household have similar views on those values. And today we're going to be talking about yet another one of our values, radical responsibility. It kind of speaks for itself, but it's this idea that you want to own something from the start to finish, right? It's this notion that emphasizing the importance of what you're doing and that you own the whole thing from kind of start to finish. That doesn't mean that you don't have other collaborators, people involved, but that you make sure that it goes from the start, from the initiation all the way down to the end. And it rejects the idea that you're going to necessarily, you're blocked or you can't get something done because of someone else. Can you talk a little bit about why radical responsibility? What moved you to have that? I mean, is there aspects in your life as your career, both from a childhood to now, that you took on radical responsibility and why is that one of the CatTalk's values?
Yeah, I think it stems from, I mean, obviously working at different companies before we started this company, as well as kind of what we see as traditional kind of failure points in companies over time. So when I used to work at other companies, there was a lot of like, well, I told so-and-so and I didn't know what happened from there. Or like we were waiting. I thought so-and-so was going to have the ball, a lot of drop balls, a lot of things like that. And when you found a company and you start out and it's just you, maybe one other person, and you realize that it's cliche, but the buck does stop with you. There isn't anyone for you to kind of delegate to I'm waiting on so-and-so. Like you realize that like the market and customers do not care if so-and-so didn't do their job or even they didn't do their job. It's really like, you have to overcome that and figure out how to get them their results that they're looking for, regardless, even from their own failures and their own, so even sometimes people are like, the customer didn't respond to me. I'm like, what did you do to make sure they responded? What did you do to bring that forward? The customer is paying us to get an outcome. They want that outcome, even if they, regardless of what happens along the way. So this will kind of tie into another value that we have, which is called outstanding outcomes with customers. But really the idea is if something is given to you, you own it, you take ownership of it and you drive it towards completion instead of saying, it's sitting over here or there, somebody else's responsibility. It's always your responsibility to drive it forward, even if it's necessarily out of your control.
Is that a result of starting your own company? Is that a result of that? Did you learn that radical responsibility because you had an idea, a vision, something you wanted to achieve with CatTalk and starting that business, and you were just kind of forced into it? Or do you think that comes from somewhere else?
I think it's necessity. I mean, I think it's very hard to, I think in the early days when you were like struggling, we were struggling to get things going, and then you would have this, kind of idea of like, I did this and the customer didn't respond, or I did this and we, something didn't happen, the vendor we worked with didn't, include us or something happened that drove that. And then it always felt powerless in that situation. Like, well, I don't have any control over it. So you don't have there and it's so-and-so's issue or the problem is outside of me or outside of us. So it felt kind of powerless. And even if that's true, it's not helpful. So I kind of like doing things, framing things around what's helpful, necessarily just, even if it's not in your responsibility or it's not something that you even have control over, believing you can, you have that you do have control over and you can be responsible for it, is actually more helpful. It allows you to do things that you wouldn't normally do. You just, like the example earlier where it says, why I'm waiting on the customer to do this, or the customer has a bad process that's causing this issue. You could say, well, they just have a bad process and that's their issue. Or I could say, hey, like, I'm going to try to convince them. I'm going to try to educate them. I'm going to try to get them to the result that they're looking for. I'm going to take responsibility and ownership of this and make sure they get the outcome that they're paying for and make sure they have a good result. And if you go to that belief, it was like, I own this and I got to make sure that happens, then you tend to take actions over and beyond what normal people would take. You know, being a founder, you also, like, you didn't really have anybody else to ask or to look, you know, to say, well, like, I need you to make a decision or I need you to do this thing. Like, you're the only person to do that. I mean, a lot of times there was no one else to ask. And so you want to drive that kind of that ownership down in the organization as it grew, because it actually happens with the founder, because there isn't anybody else to own it. And then as the company grows, you want to drive that ownership down the organization, so people can own things and then make the decisions without everything having to come back to you, you know, to decide.
Is there an example of where you yourself, where you didn't get what you needed from someone else, or you couldn't rely on someone else? Specifically, I mean, where you were trying to do something that you didn't have, that you needed to figure out a way around to achieve what you were trying to achieve.
I remember being in, like, actually before we started the company, I was working in a manufacturing company, and I had, like, we always made this joke that I was on Project Biff, which comes from a Dilbert cartoon called Big Improvements for Free. It's like an acronym, Project Biff. And we had this, and I had no budget. Like, I was literally, I started there as a co-op, and then I went into the IT department, and we were, and one of my things I did was I would go around to different departments and figure out, like, if there's any software changes or things that we could do from an IT perspective. Cause I eventually got moved into the IT department and we were making process improvements. Was there anything we could do to make their jobs easier? And then, but since I didn't have a budget, I really couldn't, like, spend on any software or anything at the time. So I had to either write it, or I had to figure out, like, you know, how to build it or something like that. Cause, you know, other than my time, I couldn't do that. And I remember like being frustrated several times about, like, well, if I could just buy this tool, then I could get there. You know, if I could just do this thing, then I could get this thing done, you know? And it was just like, and it felt like, because I didn't have a budget or any control over that, like, I was limited on what I could do. But then over time, I found, you know, I was able to find, like, open source projects or things. I had to basically push a little harder and do a little bit more research, which actually built my character of finding solutions despite that. Because, like, constraints actually hone you. They actually make you do a little bit more work and a little bit more research and do a little bit, and you, so that I could have just said, well, you know, I need a budget to do this thing. There's nothing I can do without it. You know, I'm not going to be able to move this thing project forward. But by having that constraint and not having that budget, I'm still responsible for the outcome. People, I couldn't spend all day doing nothing. So I would figure out a way, you know, despite the fact that I had no budget, to then build something or find something open source or cobble together whatever I could, you know, what we already had, to make something, make an improvement so we can move forward. And that's just, it's a good example. Even before we started the company, that's how we did it. So that's, I've always kind of had that approach to things.
So you would see radical responsibility as, or do you, as, like, self-imposed pressure?
Yeah, I think about it more, I think it's more empowering. If you're responsible for it, then you're kind of admitting to yourself that there's something you can do, as opposed to something that you can't do. It's kind of like people have all kinds of reasons why they can't do what they want, right? They usually point externally all the time, like, well, I can't do this because of my parents, I can't do this because of my wife, I can't do this because of my kids, or I got, you know, I don't have this, and it's like they're always kind of pointing everywhere else about why they can't do that, and that's so disempowering, right? You can't. It's kind of like, you always want to say, and then what, right? You like, right. I can't do it because of this. Okay. Well, then I guess you're never going to be successful ever. And then they, if you ever say that to them, they're always like, well, no. And I'm like, okay, well, then you have responsibility. You have ownership of it. You could actually do something. You just want somebody to agree with you that you can't. Like, so what is you're really trying to get to, right? So how do you, you know, so to me, it's like being radically responsible is like freeing more than it is constraining, because it's like, you're saying that you now have the ability to do something about it. And then, cause you own it, you can move it forward. And that despite these things that are happening, you're still going to find a way, you're going to take ownership and move it forward. And instead of just saying, looking for a reason why you can't do it.
I heard a teacher one time who worked with a lot of troubled youth, a lot of, you know, difficult kids who were difficult backgrounds, and they would come in and say this sort of thing. Hey, I can't do my assignment because of this, or I couldn't do it because of that, or I just didn't care, or whatever. There was, like you said, pointing fingers, excuses, but she would say, so what, now what? Meaning that, I mean, it's kind of brutal. Right. I mean, you think about like a teacher would say that to a student and say, so what, now what? But her message was the same, which was, yes, the situation stinks. The situation's horrible. You have, you're in an unfortunate situation, and you got a lot of bad luck, or, you know, what's happened to you is not fair, right? Just like anything in life. Instead of complaining about those, you know, she would say, like, you know, so what, now what? So yes, that is the facts, right? That is the case. That's the conditions. Now what are you going to do about it? Because that's the only thing really you have in your power. That's the only thing you're responsible for. You're only responsible for how you respond to those things, how you feel, how you act. That's all you really have. You don't have control of the outside world.
Yeah, tactically, I mean, I think also you see this with like employees and things like that. The people are afraid to own because they're afraid of something being their fault, right? So they will always defer back to, like, you know, they'll push a decision back up again in the organization, or they'll say, well, I can't, I don't know what to do. And then you're like, and then you end up in you kind of get in this transactional kind of relationship of like, we'll do this, I'll check it, make sure, and then give you the next thing, I'll check it. And then you get in this kind of back and forth all the time, transactional management type of style, as opposed to like more of a transformative management style, which is like, hey, I need you, this is the outcome I'm looking for. And then you own it. You own that outcome. So go do this. Go take radical responsibility and get me this outcome. Because otherwise, you get this kind of whack-a-mole type of back and forth. Like, hey, do this thing. I got stuck. What should I do now? We'll try this other thing. Well, I'm stuck. Or I can't do that. I don't have training. Well, you know, it's like he just goes back and forth, and like the manager or somebody is just kind of whacking a mole of every objection they have around doing the work. Where it's like, you know, a different way of looking at it would be like, hey, I need you to get this outcome. And you're like, and they go, well, I don't have this training. I'm like, well, what would you do to get the training? You know, go, you know, how would you figure it out? Like, you know, like go do the next thing. I think a really good tactical thing I heard about was called the 1-3-1, which is, I think comes from Dan Martell. And the 1-3-1, which is like one problem, three possible solutions and one recommendation. And then like the idea would be that no one can bring you a problem without all those things. They can't just come and dump it on your lap and have you whack-a-mole. They have to do that. And that requires them to think it through, which then kind of is a kickstarter into responsibility, into them owning the outcome. Because once they kind of go through that thinking, they kind of move forward on their own, as opposed to just, you know, and then they start realizing they can make that decision. And you also gotta like foster that with them. You gotta let them know it's okay to make a decision. And when they make a decision that you don't agree with, you say, oh, that's fine. At least you made a decision, right? You got to support them in that and encourage them in that. Otherwise you will teach them how you want to be treated, which is that you want to be told about everything and you want to decide everything. And then it ends up backfiring to you. So I think people naturally are afraid to take ownership unless they're empowered to do so.
It's harder, right? It's harder to take the responsibility. If you can just hand it off to somebody else, right? Hey, you take care of that. I think, I mean, this show is not about politics, of course, but I think, you know, a lot of people, and especially this time of year, talk about all the things happening. People always want someone else to fix the problem, right? Oh, if we hire the right, if we get the right government in place, or my guy wins, or my person wins, or if my representative wins, or we'll fix everything. We'll fix everything. And really that everything else is just a mirror of ourselves, right? Everything is just a mirror of what we choose to do. So if things are not in a good place, society's in a bad place, or the business in a bad place, it's like we're a reflection of ourselves, both as a human, but as an organization, right? Because an organization is really just a bunch of humans. So how that organization works, whether that's, you know, a classroom or a company, the way it projects is how people take responsibility for what's at their feet.
Yeah, I think people, they, you know, it's because it's difficult. I mean, it's difficult to say that was my fault, because it hurts your ego. It hurts all those types of things. So it's like, it's painful. So people avoid it. Right. So, but the problem is it's like short-term versus long-term pain. Like, yes, I didn't do the thing. So the thing is, it doesn't work. You know, it's like, it's my fault. I didn't do it, you know? And it's like, I'm responsible. Like, well, you know, I mean, cause at the end of the day, it's like, if our people in CAD talk don't do their, you know, we don't implement projects well, or we don't serve the customers well, it's my fault. I'm the CEO. It's like, it comes back to me and you're like, well, I didn't do that work, or I didn't forget to send that email. It doesn't matter. I'm still responsible because I influence that. And the direction that we set does that. And by deciding to own that and deciding to take the short-term ego hit of this thing didn't go the way it's supposed to, and I'm responsible, I therefore am empowered to make it better for the future. If I avoid it, I'm doomed to repeat it. That same thing's doomed to repeat over and over again. It's a lot of it's a short-term versus long-term kind of game scenario where, you know, you, yes, short-term pain, but long-term benefit by being responsible.
How does blame work into that, right? Like, not all cultures. I was thinking about like a book I once read about the difference between American culture and Japanese culture, and how the book was saying that American culture has a much more kind of blaming aspect to it. So, for example, you know, if something breaks in America, we would be like, "Oh, who broke it?" Right? We would want to get the person who broke it first and hold them accountable, some kind of punishment. Versus like in Japan, it was like, it's more about like, no, this thing's just broke. Let's get that fixed. Right. And then the focus was less on placing blame and more just take responsibility for the next action that needs to be done.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about the Japanese culture versus the American culture. I'd heard that too. It's like, it's an interesting way to look at it. Cause if you can take the blame out of it and you can say that the thing is just messed up because it, you know, entropy or whatever, it just, things go bad sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, and entropy is just the, you know, law. It's like a, not to get too technical, but law of thermodynamics, or that basically says that all things go badly over time. They deteriorate over time. So something could just break because it, you know, that's what things tend to do. They tend to break. And then, you know, and then you can assign blame to it. If you assign blame to it, then you're basically building in a punishment from which people will try to avoid. If you're just saying, if you're going to accept the fact that things just happen and that systems fail and things, people forget things and stuff like that, you can definitely foster a culture where people are just like, yeah, this thing went wrong. Let's focus on how we make it right, as opposed to figuring out who did it wrong. And then if you can do that, which is sometimes difficult to do because especially if you have like, you know, repeat offenses, repeat things happening and stuff like that, you know, offenses at the right word, but like repeat, it's happening over and over again. It's hard not to say, well, so-and-so is not doing their job, or so-and-so is not doing this. You know, it's like, it's really hard to avoid it, but I think it would be beneficial to have, if you can push that culturally to say, well, yes, this thing, figuring out who did it wrong or why it's wrong isn't as important as making sure it, you know, it's corrected and it doesn't happen again. Yeah.
I think it, you know, it's radical responsibility. It's not that far from, you know, what I was teaching, or even, you know, myself, hold myself accountable. It's that personal responsibility, right? Everyone has to have that, take their personal responsibility. Did I take personal responsibility to do everything I could within my power to do that? Because obviously we live in a complex world and lots of different people, stakeholders. There are times that it is completely out of your control, but you can do everything you can do within how you handle yourself, how you interact, like all of those things are. And I guess if taking away blame from it, or trying to, if you try to assign blame right away, then you're just looking for something to someone to punish, like to your point, to punish. Whereas if you say, well, I have my personal responsibility. I did everything that I could. And I think even if you get wrongly blamed for something, right, if at the end of the day, the situation stinks, but then you also know, look, I did everything I could, or I was responsible, right? I did what I could. I made it myself, or I had this conversation, or I did what it took from my end. But, you know, if I were to get blamed, then I at least knew I stuck to the value of radical responsibility. I did what I could.
Yeah. And like, even like, I think sometimes responsibility extends beyond like a fault measure. It's like, so I know like people, sometimes we have like in the past, people will, like I remember even here, we've had like people move on and things like that. And like, and a lot of companies will have this happen where like the person who moves on tends to get blamed for everything that went wrong mm-hmm. before that. Right. Cause it's so easy. They're not here to defend themselves, but it really kind of rejects the idea of radical responsibility. Like the blame doesn't matter. The problem still persisted. Right. The problem. So like, so-and-so, like, you know, good example, like so-and-so messed up the project and it didn't move forward and didn't tell the customer or what, you know, that type of thing. And you're like, that's why this project is messed up. And like, well, did we do it? What happened with it after they left? Well, nothing happened because, and then you're like, okay, well then we're not being responsible for it. Like, it doesn't matter. Like we, you know, that there's to be radically responsible. You take responsibility over the thing, regardless of what happened before it. Right. And you say, I now own this thing. I'm moving it forward and I'm going to figure out how to go forward with it. You know, yes, that thing was bad before, but now I'm taking responsibility over it and making sure it's going to get to the outcome that needs to be, instead of just like leaving it out there as something that's like, you know, not completed. And then you can still blame the other person for that's no longer here. So it's like,
right.
It's like both take responsibility for things you didn't do or also picking something up that needs to be somebody that needs to be done. That needs to be taken care of and, you know, taking ownership of it. Yeah.
And the responsibility I think is also positive. Yeah, has a positive aspect when things do go well and you've done a good job, right? You say you are responsible. Like, hey, I was responsible for that. I was a big part of that. And that's a great thing, right? Like, and it's good to have that feeling. So, but I think I got to this a little bit with the blame, but about teams or, you know, if you're in a team, in terms of responsibilities, because I think there's going to be confusion there as well, is the sense that you're working together collaboratively on something, especially what we do. We work across, we're an integration, right? So of course we working with lots of different people on different sides. It's rare that people go, we're all responsible for this. So how do you manage it? Even here, you know, even within the business, how do we let people know that, you know, you're all responsible for this? But then there are parts that each person's responsible for.
There's kind of like different, you know, different dynamics with a team versus an individual, things like that. Like I like to, when there's a thing to be done, you know, like a task or some kind of outcome that you're wanting to get, generally I like to have a single person responsible, a single responsible party, right? So because it kind of goes back to this, like, I think there was a story about this, like in New York City that like, or something happens, I think it was New York City, but like there was a murder happening and then everyone assumed everybody else was going to call the police about it. And nobody ever called. Right. And then they said, like, if an accident happens, you say, somebody will scream like call 911. And then everyone's just like staring at each other because they don't know who's, and it's, you're better to like point at a person and say,
right,
you call 911. And I kind of have the same belief when it comes to like task or individual things. Like if you define it to, you are responsible for this. And then, you know, and they go, well, I'm gonna be on vacation next week. Right. And then you are responsible for finding someone to take care of it while you are on vacation next week, you know? And so it's like, right, that way, you know, it drives down to like, it's clear who has the ball and who needs to move it forward and what the next action needs to be. Now, when you have like a departmental goal of like, we need to get, you know, this customer satisfaction level and things like that, then those kind of break down into, you know, like everyone needs to do something in order for that to hit that goal, right? In order to drive that. But always it's going to like, you know, and then there's peer pressure in that group to kind of get to that point. So it's related, but not direct, then you can kind of get that. Then you always can tie that back down to some task or some kind of activity that somebody's responsible for to ensure that get that outcome. So every kind of major outcome breaks down into smaller activities that need to be completed that you can have a single responsibility for.
Right.
And then there's just, then the idea of the team together is applying kind of positive peer pressure for everybody to do to be responsible for their part.
Yeah. No one, remember back when we were young, you know, grew up in like DARE or whatever, peer pressure, right? That was always like a negative thing. Like don't get pressured into smoking. Don't get pressured, peer pressure. But peer pressure is can be positive as well, right? To help push behavior. You see that even in, you know, organizations, teams, sports, where that peer pressure can help, you know, drive the behaviors that you're looking for. So let's say you're not responsible, right? You're not taking radical responsibility. How do you How do you start to do that, right? How do you start to become radically responsible? How, you know, if you're new in your career, or you've not been in the past radically responsible, well, how do you start, right? It's like anything else. How do you start?
I think if you're given, you're trying to get to an outcome, right? If somebody just giving you a task, you could also ask for the outcome. Like, what's the outcome that you're looking to get? Right. And then you can, that way you can pick the next task and kind of drive towards that. And then you ask the question, you know, well, if I, you know, can I make some decisions here? You can kind of make it to where it's more and, you know, it's more under your purview. The other thing would be like when you start feeling stuck and you're like, well, I need this or I need that, you know, right. Somebody has to make a decision. And you're like, well, what if I did have control over that? What would I do? And how can I move this forward anyway? How can I still get the outcome anyway? As opposed to like, assume you had no one to ask or no one to move forward, what would you do? And that gives you, and then you're like, okay, well, that means you have ownership over it. You would say that I'm going to do what it takes to kind of move to the next level without looking for the first roadblock and then kind of looking around for someone to give you an answer. You know, you keep pushing. And then so you can, even if you're in the frame of like, well, I need to ask my boss or I need to ask so-and-so about that. You're like, okay, what if I had to come up with the answer, you know, right now, what would I do? I was like, well, I would do this and then try doing that. And then you can keep moving in that direction and you'll build that muscle of kind of like, you don't really probably need to ask that. Are you really just wanting to be sure.
Right.
And being okay with moving forward with action, even if you're unsure that and kind of flexing that muscle and learning how to build that.
Radical responsibility is scary, right? I mean, it's scary because you're taking a risk in some regard, but definitely empowering because it's going to drive you to be a better person, better human altogether, right? At home, at work, as a friend, right? As a son, as a father, as a brother or a sister, right? All of those things. You say, I take responsibility for that relationship. It reminds me like, I was thinking about sister because our sister, she doesn't live in Cincinnati. She's moved away from a different state, and so I set up a monthly call with her. I wanted to make sure I had a relationship with her because being away and not being, you know, present, I wanted to take responsibility to say, hey, I'm gonna set up a call once a month to talk to her to see how her life's doing, to see how things are going. But that's because it was important to me. I was taking responsibility for that relationship because it was important. It was important to me. It's something I valued. And so I think we can do that in all aspects of our life, right? I think we focus a lot about here at the office or at work or with that responsibility, but it's really in every aspect, right? So like even with you, like I wanted my sons to have a relationship with their uncle, and maybe it's a male thing, or maybe it's just a us thing, a dude thing. You think the relationships are just going to work, and then you take responsibility and say, hey, I got to take responsibility for this thing.
I think everybody's waiting for the other person to take the action. Yeah. Right. And it's like, someone has to be first. You might as well. And you might as well be you.
Yeah. That's it. What do you think prevents people? Is that just fear, you think?
People, what's the term? They should all over themselves. They should do this. They should do that. And they may not really want to sometimes. Right. They just don't really want to, but they think they should, you know, or just like I said, it's the feeling that they don't, you know, it's like they feel like they're busy, right? Or they, you know, people make a lot of excuses about things, but I think it comes down to like, they either don't value the thing enough or money, how they spend their money or how they schedule their time. And you can see what they value, right? It's like, that's really how you can drive it. And people, they want to value things, or they sometimes they feel that they don't really, right? I like to have this relationship with my, you know, with my family, but you watch Netflix for half the day, right? So it's like, you know, so maybe it's that's like, the ultimate. So I think a lot of times, yeah, what's that?
Maybe that's the ultimate radical responsibility, is that honesty with yourself, right? Honesty of like yourself, mm-hmm. of saying, hey, I don't do this, and I don't do this for a reason. Right. I do this because I have a reason for that. That's really responsible. If you can look at yourself and look at your decisions and say, and be honest, say, why am I choosing to do X or to do Y?
Yeah. The one that always common comes up is like, I don't have time for this. And that's one of the things that, and I always say, reframe that as, I won't make time for this.
Right.
you know, because that's really what you're saying. It's not, there's, everyone has the same amount of time, right? 24 hours a day, you know, everybody has the same amount of time. But when you say, I don't have time for this, it means it's just basically saying,
I'm choosing.
It isn't worth it for me to do that.
Right.
So,
yeah. Speaking of time, I think we're about out of time. So again, Scott, I really appreciate, you know, these discussions are good about our values and kind of your thought process, but also somewhat philosophical at times, looking at ourselves and trying to improve. So, you know, thanks for taking today and this 30, 40 minutes here to discuss radical responsibility. Any closing remarks?
No, I think it's, I think everybody could benefit from by taking a little more responsibility on the outcomes in their life. And, yeah, I think it's a good, it's one of the values that I remember being one of the, I mean, all the values are obviously super important to me, but that was, I remember thinking about this one quite a lot when we came up with it. So it's a very important one.
So just as a reminder, it's the Integrate Intelligently podcast. I'm Jeff Brickler. And this is Scott Brickler. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Integrate Intelligently podcast from CanTalk Software. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss future episodes. Video versions of the podcast will be available on CanTalk's YouTube page, linked in the show notes. The Integrate Intelligently podcast is hosted by CanTalk CEO Scott Brickler and CRO Jeff Brickler. Our producer is myself, marketing manager John Thomas. If you have a story you want to share on the podcast or you want to partner with us, let us know. Email marketing@cantalk.com and be sure to mention podcast in the subject line.